They're like a Twinkie without the rich home-baked flavor. Dough, frosting, sugar, what do they cost, like a million for a dollar?
Firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, available on our local numbers, too, at 247-7282-3534-674, and our esteemed sponsors are here in the studio with us here, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Hey, Ben.
All right, so what are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, the last couple of weeks we've talked about tenants in common, interest in property and real property. And, of course, the spinoff from tenants in common interest or an undivided interest in property amongst two or more people is, well, what happens if you can't agree?
Right.
And, of course, Wes and I discussed last week, you know, well, what happens if you can't agree is that many times you then have to petition to partition the action. I mean, to file a petition to partition action, which, of course, is to then divide the property or force one's hand as to the ownership of that property. So today we want to continue to kind of talk about that in a way, but talk about some other forms of ownership of real property and some of the wrinkles that evolve with just ownership of property with more than one person.
Mm-hmm.
Now, kind of the kissing cousin, if you will, to tenants in common. If property's not owned by tenants in common,
right,
which is property owned in undivided interest by more than one person, then nine times out of ten, it's going to be owned by tenants by the entirety. Tenants by the entirety, Ben, is a fancy word for just simply the fact that property in the state of North Carolina is owned between husband and wife.
Okay. All right. So.
And, of course, if you're married, husband and wife, then all sorts of legal rights and responsibilities, if you will, evolve as a result of that ownership in that property. And the most notable advantage is that simply by operation of law, if property is titled between husband and wife upon the death of the wife or the husband, notwithstanding what the will might say, notwithstanding if they do not have a will, that property vests in the surviving spouse. And so the first thing that any estate lawyer is going to ask a spouse in their office is, tell me about your house and how did it how is it titled? How does it happen to be titled? And is it titled jointly? Is your name also on the deed? The law is liberal in the way in which it interprets the actual wording. It doesn't have to necessarily say wife or husband. It just simply has to be that the two names are on the deed and that at the time that the deed, that the title vests, that the parties were legally married. And if they were, then it is presumed that it be tenants by entirety. And all of that law then evolves and controls the title to that property.
Well, you're speaking of wrinkles. I can foresee one right there, more of a family law question, but sometimes people separate and never get divorced. And I would imagine that presents an issue.
Well, absolutely it does. If they have a separation agreement, then the separation agreement or divorce will sever the tenants by entirety. And guess what? Put that property tenants in common.
Or
the divorce automatically makes it tenants common.
That's tenants
in common as well.
So there's still a marital interest in the property that gets divided at some point in time. Right?
That's right. If it's tenants by entirety and you know, you get divorced, then it just automatically goes 50-50. It's just a default provision, you know, in our statutes and our law. So
but
you're right. I mean, in the event that they have the property tenants by entirety, but they separate, but they just are living separate and apart, and years go by and they never get divorced formally, and one of them dies,
happens
the property
more often
all
than
goes
know.
To the survivor, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So you have to be careful about that.
So yes, there's tenants in common interest in real property. There's tenants by entirety interest in real property. And then there is also, Ben, joint tenancy with right of survivorship. This is somewhat of a hybrid title. It has to be fairly intention in the deed. It has to be fairly well drafted in the deed with intention. But it's very prevalent in our society now. You know, these geriatric population, our population.
Right.
You know, they're our lovebirds that come into our office. You know, and they're very, very happy, and they're great in they're living together, and they're sharing expenses relative to a home. And they've been together maybe 10 or 12, 15 years at this point, but they are not going to get married.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
They're a couple and they've kept things a little bit separate, but they want to know that their home, their condominium, their townhome, if they die, is going to go to their loved one.
Right.
So, there is a way to title that property, Mary and John, jointly with right of survivorship. So to create, if you will, the same effect as a tenants by entirety interest, even though really the bonds of marriage or the legality of marriage does not exist between those two persons. That also exists to shift all the way down to the younger generation.
Sure.
Like the 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of those folks out there. We know a few of those, don't we? Who are in their young relationships, and for whatever reason. One of the things that we lawyers learn early on is just, you know, is to do our best not to judge these situations, to hear the facts of the client, and try to do our best to achieve their objectives and their results dictate that they want to.
You know, that was one of the first questions we had on this program back years ago. Was somebody who called in and said, "My son is thinking about buying a house with his girlfriend." And
what can I tell him to convince him not to do it?
I think my comment was, "Don't." but there is a means. There is a
mechanism. Well, there is, and that kind of leads us into, you know, some of the problems that we see that, you know, we'll get to in a moment with regard to these different type ownerships, but. You know, just to go back and recap, if we got the tenants in common ownership, which is just an undivided interest, and then the tenants by entirety interest, and those are the most common co-ownership type interest to real property. Then, as Cecil just mentioned, the joint tenants with right of survivorship. If you have any question about whether you own property, joint tenants with right of survivorship, just look at your deed. If it doesn't say it, it's not that.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to have the words, for example, tenants in common, you know, in a deed for it to be tenants in common. You got to look at the fact of, you know, when the property was purchased and what names are on it, on the deed, so on and so forth, or when it was acquired. And also tenants by entirety doesn't have to state that on it either. But some of the other things that we look at is the right to convey property. You know, if you own tenants by entirety or joint tenants with right or survivorship property, you know, you can't convey that interest unless you have a joiner of both parties. Everybody's got to join in on that. But when you're talking about a tenants in common interest, you know, Ben, you own 50% and, you know, the guy down the road owns 50%. You can sell your 50% all day long. You don't have to have, you know, his joiner, you know, as a grantor on the deed. Now, the question would be, you know, who would want to own 50% with someone they don't know?
Right.
You know, however, that's sometimes what spins us off into that petition to partition if we can't come to terms with regard to the property. You know, we also look at, you know, issues that we deal with regard to what judgments attach to, liability. You know, joint tenants and tenants by entirety property is really, you know, dealt with in a very similar way when one of the owners of the property has a judgment against them. If they defaulted on a loan and the bank got did a foreclosure on a different property, for example, and then there was a deficiency judgment, or if there was some liability with regard to a contract, or it could be anything with regard to a judgment. But if you know, that judgment is only as to one of the owners, then the judgment creditor doesn't have the right to force the sale of the property of the whole in order to get his or her judgment paid. However, if you look at tenants in common, hey, your 50% interest
is
there on its own island. It can be taken. And then your friend down the road who owns the property with you 50-50 could end up having, you know, for example, the bank as the other 50% owner through a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a sale where the bank is the high bidder, so on and so forth.
I would imagine with business foreclosures that happens.
Yeah, it does. It mm-hmm. does. So, you know, it's very important, you know, when we're advising people about, you know, debts they might have
mm-hmm.
and potentially even lawsuits that they're involved in, they're defending, you know, mm-hmm. those type things. You know, one of the very important questions for us to look at and for us to ask would be, what real property do you own and how do you own it? And also, how is it encumbered as well? Because
right.
if it's significantly encumbered, then the likelihood is that the judgment creditor is not going to spend time and effort and money, you know, to force a sale of property that they're not going to get paid on anyway because there's a mortgage on it.
Mm.
So, you know, we're kind of spinning off into a couple of other issues there, but that's the way these things go.
Yeah. If you have faced one of those issues, you'd like to ask questions about it, our numbers are 800-818-2255. That's toll free. You can also call us at 247-7282 or 353-4674 here for Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. And we'll have more to come in just a moment. Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station every Tuesday morning. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys of law, the right advice at the right time, on the web at harvellandcollins.com, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. And we've been talking about titling property, kind of setting up for what is happening a lot now, probably a very vast growing industry of people living together and buying property.
Sure, yeah. We talked about the tenants by entirety and then the tenants in common and mm-hmm. the joint tenants with right of survivorship. Just, you know, went over some of the differences mm-hmm. and comparisons of those different co-ownership type interests to property. You know, Ben, one of the scenarios that we see relatively often is that, you know, when maybe a girlfriend, boyfriend decide, hey, we don't want to get married, but it's time for us to go ahead and move in together, maybe consolidate our expenses
mm-hmm.
and go ahead and buy a piece of property together. Or a circumstance could be as well, you know, I own a property and we're going to go get a loan together for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm going to pledge my property as the loan for the girlfriend, boyfriend loan, that,
right.
that type situation.
Right.
Well, and I think the mindset there is that, you know, as long as we can go to the bank and we can get qualified for the loan, then the bank must be giving us its stamp of approval.
Mm-hmm.
So everything, you know, kind of legally must be okay.
Right.
You know, it works in the system. So mm-hmm. I think we're probably okay. But then the question that comes to the attorney mm-hmm. at a later date is that, well, we broke up and, you know, he is not paying on this loan anymore. I'm
mm-hmm.
having to pay the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
but my name's on it.
Right.
You know, or, he is not contributing, anymore. And, you know, it's my property. I pledge my property. We're both on the loan, but I just pledge my property.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm having to cover all of it. I'm looking at losing my property. So the question then would be, what do you do about that?
Mm-hmm.
And this,
this
is a nightmare situation.
Yeah.
And it goes back to, if our listeners ponder this for a moment, it goes back to the fact that there really initially was no structure
mm-hmm.
around this contingency. You know, a corporation or an LLC would have wrapped this situation with some buyout, with
mm-hmm.
some structure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Even a marriage by operation of law would have wrapped this situation with a structure. The law talks about what happens when there's debt
mm-hmm.
in a marriage on property.
Right.
And then how that debt gets resolved as between the husband and the wife. But when your girlfriend, boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
okay,
yes.
all right, and you don't have corporation and you don't have an LLC and you're not married, there is no real structure out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of stops to kind of a partnership, if you will, partnership, contract,
right.
Unjust enrichment. It's a real mixed bag of law that we lawyers, unjust enrichment, have to get into in order to get it resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that equates to a mess,
mm-hmm.
and that equates to an expensive mess. So, you boyfriends and girlfriends out there, whether you're 20 years old
or
whether
70.
You're 70 years old,
yeah.
you know, a contract even, mm-hmm. just right. a contract.
There are ways to do it.
Yes.
Yeah. Just don't think that just because you've gotten the loan that everything is good
mm-hmm.
and everything is cool and everything is going to be fine. Because, you know, if you break up,
mm-hmm.
then you are going to be, you know, in a mess because you don't have any real legal means to force anything. Now, if the property, of course, is owned by almost said husband and wife, boyfriend and girlfriend, and it is tenants in common and it's being pledged, well, of course, one of the parties does have the right, or either the party has the right to petition to partition the property.
Yeah.
But all that's going to do is force a sale of the
yeah.
property. And if there's a significant loan on the property, then maybe, you know, one of the parties is going to force the sale of the property and then bid in and try to get the property, you know, and take the other one out.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, we've spent $2,000-$4,000 of, you know, scratching our head through that legal process,
mm-hmm.
just trying to rid ourselves of the other, of the girlfriend or boyfriend.
So what would a contract look like between two people doing that?
Well, in general, I think you'd have language, of course, identifying the fact that, you know, we've made the decision to do this.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you set forth what our intent is, and then you get to the point of in the event that there's a breach, and you'd have to set forth in that contract what the elements are, such as these are the requirements. Both
mm-hmm.
parties have to contribute equally to insurance, equally to taxes, equally to payment of mortgage payments,
right.
Maintenance. You know, and in the event that a party fails to do that and fails to cure that, say within 30 days, 60 days, gives a reasonable time mm-hmm. to cure after notice, then they are in material breach of that contract, and a party would then have the right to force a buyout. We probably, as Cecil would have,
Cecil would have a
buyout provision.
Right.
How do we determine the value? Maybe we just take tax value.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then at that point in time, the one party can force the other one to perform by conveying their interest. So the one party who is performing would have to maybe go get their own loan.
Right.
Buy the other out, but at least we're not arguing about values then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We've got it set forth, maybe tax value. And we would also want a provision in there that allows for recovery of attorney's fees
exactly.
and cost in the
mm-hmm.
event of breach because, you know, why are we having to pull the trigger on this contract?
Right.
Because you breached. Mm-hmm. Now I'm having to pay my attorney to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first questions that wonderful girl or that great guy is going to say to us is, well, she's got me in this big situation and in this bind. Is she going to be forced to pay,
mm-hmm.
you know, your attorney fees, Mr. Harvell?
Right.
And the answer
right.
to the question is, in the state of North Carolina, no.
Mm-hmm. Not unless it's a
not unless right. there's a contract.
Mm-hmm.
Or statutory basis.
Statutory basis.
There wouldn't
which
be.
Here, of course, there isn't.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Okay.
So again, there's a scenario and there's a
warning contract out there. On this property that says that
mm-hmm.
if there's a breach,
mm-hmm.
okay, then the breaching party is liable for attorney fees, then there is a contract as to attorney fees. Then I could turn to that client and say, yes, guess what? I think you might have a good chance of recovering your attorney fees because you did this the right way.
And we'll have more to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Your calls and questions are welcome. You can also go online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back here with Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And, of course, with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, we're talking about unmarried persons who buy a house together, for example, is what happens there.
And yeah, we have talked about this, Ben. And Those are, I think we've kind of covered this. I think with the last few weeks we've covered some of the permutations, the wrinkles, twists and turns that evolve, in these arrangements. I think over the break, you know, Ben, we talked about, we looped back a minute to that tenants in common thing.
Right.
Let's do that real quick. Tenants in common is two or more owners.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, so many times they're not, they didn't choose each other.
Right.
They inherited the property.
Mm-hmm.
They just, you know, aunt and uncles, you know, they're first cousins, and they just all of a sudden now are in bed together owning
right.
this property.
Right.
Well, that's because that's why we now have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like they went out there and elected to buy this property with a business partner
mm-hmm.
or with a particular person, with their wife, for instance,
yeah.
or with their husband or with their brother or sister.
Not exactly eyes wide open. They
inherited something. Yeah. They're in a situation many times that they did not intentionally elect to be in. And as a result of that, you know, issues evolve in tenants in common. Two or more people who now, for whatever reason, own property, real property together. And if they can agree to sell it and can agree to the price,
mm-hmm.
then great. If they can agree to put it in an LLC and maintain the taxes, the insurance, the upkeep, rent the property,
mm-hmm.
great. But just so many times they can't.
Mm-hmm.
We have evolving in our office right now. I think it will be filed here in the next few years. I mean, the next couple of weeks, a property where for years and years and years, the property has been in a tenants in common posture. And finally, one of the tenants, one of the joint owners is mm-hmm. going to come forward and say, enough is enough. I'm tired of owning this property
mm-hmm.
with these other family members.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to try to do my best now to take control of this property.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't elect to be in business
mm-hmm.
with these other family members. She's done her best for many years to look the other way on many different issues. And she's just now tired of that.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want that to linger on now to her children.
Right, right.
Okay? And so she's kind of putting out there a marker, and she wants to just go ahead and file the petition to partition her interest.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she'll get all of the property, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
If not, she's certainly going to obtain the fair market value of her interest
yes.
in the property.
Yeah. And again, those are various permutations that we've already discussed in just this half hour, and you probably have come up with more. And you can call on the folks at HarvellandCollins.com to discuss your situation at 252-726-9050. That's 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.